Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Guillermo Amaral joins me. We're going to be talking about RC controllers, things that can drive boats and planes and helicopters and all sorts of things, but with open source software. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Guillermo Amaral. Episode 336, recorded May 13th, 2015. Deviation TX. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for the right payments API, check out Braintree V.0 SDK. With one simple integration, you get every way to pay. To learn more and to try out the sandbox, go to BraintreePayments.com/floss. And by DigitalOcean, simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code FLOSS in the billing section for a $10 credit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and not aware of it, projects you might want to download right after the show and go play with it, maybe projects that just introduce you to whole new realms, like I think this week's show is going to do as well. But let's go ahead first and bring on our co-host. Welcome back to the show, Guillermo Amaral.
Yes, Randall.
Hey, and where are you speaking to us from today? Your secret bunker in Tijuana?
Yes, it's my secret bunker here in Tijuana, Mexico. You can see my lab behind me.
Yes, the scary lab with all the resistors and stuff. Yes, I remember talking about that in an earlier show. And for those of you watching the video, you notice that this indeed is the big green tree. I'm back at ZipRecruiter, back in Santa Monica, doing the next few shows back from here. And hopefully it won't be so bandwidth challenged as it was when I was home last week. But hey, we'll just go ahead and continue on with the show. this week, we have a couple guys coming on, Mike Meyer and Jeffrey Hauschier. I should have asked him how to pronounce it, but hopefully that's close. He'll don't let me know if I get it wrong. They're going to be talking to us about Deviation TX. Deviation TX is replacement firmware for radio controlled, I guess, like helicopters and airplanes and things like that. So that the software that's in the thing that you control these little radio controlled vehicles with apparently can be upgraded and expanded because it's open source. So I don't know much about it. I haven't played with it. I haven't even played with a radio controlled device for, it must be about 25 years. I think things have probably come quite a ways since then. So hopefully they can bring us up to date on that. What do you know about this so far, Guillermo?
I haven't played with any RC helicopters or planes in like a while. I think maybe 10 years. But I used to like building them before. So maybe if this, you know, convinces me, I can probably look up my old controller from a box I have upstairs.
Yeah, one of the things is this sort of, we had a show, it must be like 6 or 7 years ago now, called Open Pilot, where we were talking about the software that goes in the actual RC device. This is sort of, as far as I go, the other end. This is the software that goes in the controller. So you're a human controlling it, doing that. Yeah, so it looks like, I wonder if they can pair them together. What if there'd be something useful for both of them? I don't know. We'll see. Hey, you know, but instead of us just making stuff up, we might as well actually talk to the experts. But in just a moment, we actually have a sponsor today. We have people that are helping to pay the bills today. So this episode is in fact brought to you by Braintree, code for easy online payments. If you're building a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, check out Braintree. The Braintree V.0 SDK makes it easy to offer multiple mobile payment types. Start accepting PayPal, Apple Pay, Bitcoin, Venmo, cards, and more, all with a single integration. It gives you simple, secure payments, code you can integrate in minutes. And developers, we got you. Don't worry about taking days to integrate your payments with Braintree. It's done in minutes. And if you don't even have time, give them a call, and they'll even handle the integration for you and walk you through it. Wow, that sounds cool. The Braintree code supports Android, iOS, and JavaScript clients. There's SDKs in 7 languages, .NET, Node.js, Java, Perl. Yay, Perl! PHP, Python, and Ruby. Elegant code with clear documentation, 10 lines of in-app code. So Braintree gives you an easy way to accept multiple payment types with one integration. Quick, knowledgeable developer support if you have any questions. Start accepting Apple Pay, PayPal, Bitcoin, Venmo, cards, and whatever's next, all with a single integration. With the Braintree V.0 V.0 SDK, excuse me there. One small snippet of code and you're all set up in less than 10 minutes. To learn more and for your first $50,000 in transactions fee-free, go to BraintreePayments.com/floss, F-L-O-S-S. We appreciate their support for this show and other shows on the TWiT network. So let's go ahead and bring on our guests. Let's bring first on Mike Meyer. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hello. Well, thank you.
And where are you speaking to us from?
Central Oklahoma.
Oh, cool. Somewhere I have to say flyover states. I'm sorry. It's probably embarrassing to say it that way, but I don't think I've ever been in Oklahoma. I think I've been over it a number of times though. So, good. And let's go also ahead and bring on, Jeffrey Hauser. Am I close, Jeffrey?
Pretty close. It's Hauser.
Hauser. Oh, that would have made it a little simpler. Okay, good. And where are you speaking to us from?
Portland, Oregon.
Oh, yeah, my home. So I was just there like Saturday. So we went on. We could have done this show next to each other, I guess. Pretty cool. I'm actually out in Beaverton area. What part are you in?
I live in kind of way northwest.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, this show is not This Week in Geography. It's about Deviation TX today. So let's start with you, Mike. Can you give us sort of an overview of the project and correct me if I made any mistakes in the opening of the show?
I think you got it mostly right. Jeffrey would actually be a better person to do this. He originated the project. I just got him here. but it is replacement firmware for the Walkira Devo line of transmitters. The next release should also run on the FR Sky Taranis. That gives you access to basically the insides of what's going on in the mixer, letting you do things that most proprietary firmware just will not let you do because it's designed to make it easy to set up your helicopter or aircraft or whatever, assuming they know which one you have.
And so what would be something that would be difficult to do with the standard software and Deviation TX makes easier?
Well, actually, I was dealing with the sailboat behind me and mm-hmm. wanted to set up so I had one control, the throttle, to control two different lines, the two sails, and have separate trims for them. Mm-hmm. Right? And that was very easy in Deviation TX, and I have no idea how you would do it on any proprietary firmware. If you go poking around for it, you can find people say, well, you open up your transmitter and you put in a piece of slab to restrict the throttle movement, and then you're set.
Okay. That sounds really interesting. And let's go ahead and go back to Jeffrey there. So how did this project get started, and why did you get involved?
Well, I guess about 3 years ago, I hadn't been in RC for probably as long as you. It's probably been since I was a kid, 25 years ago. Last time I actually used an RC vehicle, I'd seen that the mini helicopters had been, coming back online, and we'd flown big helicopters back in the day, but, with the gas powered helicopters we used to have, just learning to fly them could cost you thousands of dollars because every time you did anything, they'd break and then you have to go spend a lot of money to fix them. And as a, high school kid or younger, didn't really have the ability to deal with that. So, anyway, I noticed that these new, little micros had come online, and I started looking into them. I picked up a really cheap toy. I mean, we're talking $50, and found that the transmitters that came with them were just junk. At the same time, I realized that, I found another open source transmitter that was out there. I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of it, but it runs on the old FlySky line. And that it would just work with this new little toy helicopter, and it made it a whole lot easier to control. And since I'm an electronics guy, I thought it would be fun to look into that. And I found quite quickly that the hardware that they were running on was very limited. It didn't really have the ability to do a whole lot of anything other than what they were doing with it. And so we looked around and we found some hardware that's all ARM-based. It wasn't open source. It's all proprietary. That's the Walkira Devo line, but it can be upgraded. It can be programmed through the USB port. And so we went about, writing our own firmware for it.
How difficult was it to figure out what to do to make it programmable? Did that involve something like equivalent to jailbreaking an Android or iOS phone?
More or less, it was so. These ARM Cortex cores have a standard way of uploading to them. So in theory, it could have been very easy. You just use stock software and you upgrade it. It turns out that the Walkera line specifically had some really crude encryption to make it a little bit more difficult. So we had to upload, small snippets and try to get things working. Eventually, we figured out what they were doing. As I said, it's a really, really crude type of encryption just to make this firmware a little bit harder to read. And once we had that, then we could just program it as usual, and it was mostly a question of figuring out the hardware.
Wow! So that was that. did you do the equivalent of bricking any of your devices while you were trying to do that?
I didn't brick any of mine. The firmware is actually the way the firmware works is actually quite robust. The bootloader lives in the beginning in the front end of the ROM, and it protects itself from being overwritten. Although it's possible, it's not easy to do, certainly not from the bootloader. So we could keep just re-uploading the bootloader until it worked. Re-uploading the new firmware through the bootloader until it worked. So it wasn't too bad. Now, I know people who have bricked them since then, but I never had that problem. And even still, with a little programmer, you can unbrick them. I mean, the STM32, the ARM Cortex it uses is... you can always just reflash a new image onto it. So you'll never permanently damage it if you have the right hardware to get it around that.
So how hard was it to actually start flashing your own firmware on it when you were starting out with this project? Did you find any JTAG port on it, or how did that work?
It has an SWD port, which is basically the same as a JTAG. So we were able to, the firmware that comes on the device is, the device is protected. So the only way you can use the JTAG port is to reflash a new flip firmware, which also requires you to reflash the bootloader, which then you lose then you have to put your own bootloader on there, which it's possible. But I didn't start working with the JTAG port until after I had figured out how to talk to the device, so that I could download the bootloader and have a copy of it. That just made it easier, so that I could then basically open the device and reflash the bootloader back onto it. That made it a lot easier.
Could you give us a little idea of how much time it took you to reverse engineer that encryption on the device there?
A day or two. It was not much work.
So it's they were just maybe XORing something, or was it a standard? I'm guessing they didn't use any private key encryption or anything, that complicated.
They basically just have a shift. There's our byte range, and in that byte range, they shifted a certain number of bytes depending on the transmitter. So each transmitter has its own shift value, but it's pretty crude. I mean, it was, and the nice thing about their solution was. At least for us, most of the bytes you upload just go directly in unaltered. It's only a range of bytes that get changed. And so we were actually, as we were going through this, we were able to find bytes that we could send unaltered. And so we could actually write little mini programs into the firmware that would work. And then we'd write a bigger one and it wouldn't work. And so eventually we were able to figure out what was going on there. We could write data into the firmware and then read it back and see how it changed. And we could figure out what it was doing.
See, that's the sort of stuff I like. So it's all super fun. Do you guys handle it? I'm guessing it's only Cortex-M you guys are working with?
Yeah, all of the Walkera transmitters are all the STMicro Cortex-M3 based. The Taranis is also M3 based. It's got the F2 processor in it, but. So all the ones we've worked on so far have all been basically Cortex M3.
Well, that's super. That sounds extremely fun. Especially working with those processors. I get to work with them a few of them sometimes. So it's kind of. I'm probably getting a little bit too geeky for our next audience here. So what can you tell us about how you guys figured out? To upload the new firmware, is there a certain way you have to boot the device to be able to push new firmware into it?
So the transmitters are designed to be software upgradable. So there's basically a button on the transmitter you press while you're turning it on, and it will switch into bootload mode. And then you just use a standard. The Walkera comes with it, actually delivers its own USB, you know, Windows program. You just kind of dump the firmware in it and hit the button. I have since written my own Java-based USB programmer for this so that we could do it on basically any platform because being restricted to Windows kind of sucks.
Yes, it does. I was going to work into that. Okay, so it's you're mainly using USB then to be able to push it with your new custom hardware there. I mean, your custom software. Yes. Did you use, by any chance, did you use Perl?
I'm a big Perl programmer myself. You know, I use Perl a lot at work. And so I have some utilities that run kind of to manipulate the firmware before I upload it that are all written in Perl. But most of the code itself is all C.
Yay.
So did you start with the whole software from scratch, or did you maybe fork this from a different project?
No, the deviation software was all written basically from scratch. We looked at some of the open source transmitters that I mentioned that ran on the old PlySky, but they weren't suitable for the kind of things that I wanted to do. We re-implement many of the same concepts that they use. So they have kind of methods of working and you know, ways of interacting with the transmitter, and we copied a lot of that from the ER9X, some of these other firmwares that that are out there for different hardware, but the actual software is all written from scratch.
I should probably get into this. What type of license are you guys working with, and if is this code available somewhere we can get it, or is it just maybe on GitHub?
So everything's GPL. The entire project is GPL licensed, and you can absolutely find it. Actually, if you go to deviationtx.com, you'll find a link to. I think you should find a link to the Bitbucket. We run it in Mercurial, not in Git. So Bitbucket, you can find everything there.
So were you guys able to reverse engineer the original firmware, or how did you go into actually figuring out the hardware part to make your own firmware for it?
So there's two kind of pieces to that. For the physical hardware inside of the transmitter, it was a lot of just actually taking pictures of the boards, tracing them out, figuring out. I mean, most of the interfaces are standard, so it's almost all SPI. There's a couple of wide buses for the display driver. You could pretty easily just look at it and see it, figure out what you need to attach to, and then attach a logic probe and snoop the buses while the transmitter's while the official firmware is on there. All the dials, the buttons and dials and switches and levers, you can just trace them back. You figure out which ones are analog, which ones are digital. It's pretty straightforward from there. That took a lot longer, certainly, to get our firmware working. I think we were maybe a month or two before we had all of the hardware basically understood in the first transmitter.
Oh, that's great. So I'm guessing it doesn't use any external ROMs or anything complicated like that. It's just basically using the internal interfaces.
Yep, there's a small serial flash on the device, which is used for extra storage for model, basically saving your models off and some configuration parameters. And that, again, was pretty easy to get to. We actually got to that almost first, because before we figured out the serial port, it was kind of the only way to get information off of the device.
That sounds super interesting. So what's going to be next on your agenda? Is any newer models you are planning on maybe working with?
So Walkera has a line of 7 or 8 different transmitters that they have sold over the past 5 years or so. We support almost all of them. There are some brand new ones. They basically changed their work model. Now that drones have become really popular, they're basically going into the drone market, and they've basically stopped selling their older transmitters. They certainly don't support them anymore. Right now we're trying to get their latest version, which has FPV, that's video feedback from the model, back in. And we're trying to get that up and running right now.
Let's give Jeffrey just a little break here. Mike, what's your relationship to the project?
I started using it a couple of years ago, pretty much the same way that Jeffrey did. I started with small helicopters using the OpenTX firmware that I believe he was trying to remember the name of.
Okay.
And went looking for, wanted a better quality transmitter than what that ran on at the time, and found the Walkira Devos and Deviation TX. And I contribute patches and upgrades to the firmware. And like I said, I set up this for us, try to get us a little bit more exposure. And oh yeah, I actually, a few months ago, things were slowing down. Jeffrey was busy and I was getting frustrated trying to integrate patches coming in from a number of other people. So I set up a team repository that pretty much everybody who was working on it shifted to, and Jeffrey was kind enough to start doing nightly builds from and link to when he got back to work on the project some more.
Cool. And Jeffrey, I understand you've done some really other interesting things as well. I mean, you look like you're just one of those Renaissance maker guys. Can you tell me some of the other things you've worked on?
I've loved working on hardware since forever, as far as electronics go. Let's see, recently, when I moved into my house about 10 years ago, we're out in the country, we're on a well pump. And the pump was really finicky. We had a very low flow well at the time, and so trying to keep the tank full without draining the well dry, it was set up in a really crude manner. The first thing I did as soon as I bought it, the house, was to kind of build a little controller that would, basically monitor the water level. It uses a capacitance level meter inside of the plastic, inside of the water tank, to measure how high the water level is, and it turns it cycles the pump kind of on an intermittent frequency to make sure that the tank stays full without draining the well dry. Since then, I haven't needed it anymore. We changed our setup, but that was one of the first things I did when I got here. More recently, being from the Northwest, or living in the Northwest now, I've been big into homebrew, and so I've got a big kegerator downstairs. And I was trying to set up something that would basically measure the level inside of each of the kegs, which turns out to be quite challenging because they're metal pressure vessels. So there's not a lot of mechanisms that you can use to get at that. So I've tried different systems. I've tried the same system I used in my well pump, a capacitive measurement. I've tried weight systems. We've tried flow control. Honestly, I've still not found anything that really works well, but it's been an ongoing project.
Hey, so getting back to the RC stuff, because that's really what we're here for today. The RC controllers that I used many, many decades ago that were basically just dumb boxes. I mean, basically some signal was transmitted as an analog channel, and you could have like four channel controllers, things like that. What is the purpose of putting so much smarts in the transmitter now? Are they doing fancier things with it? Obviously.
Yes, a lot of the main reason, I think, is, again, the helicopter type of controls. One of the things that you want with, especially with helicopters, is the ability to have variable rates. So you basically don't want a one-to-one match between the stick position and what's actually going on the helicopter. With helicopters, you actually have to mix in your throttle with the blade pitch. So there's a need to basically merge multiple channels together to basically control the helicopter properly. Now, a lot of that recently has been moved on to the helicopters, and so we're starting to get more into sort of dumber transmitters being acceptable. But for high performance flight, you really need these more the kind of digital mixers that will control give you more control over what's going on here. So that's a lot of it. To be honest, on my side, most of what we really get is the ability to do custom protocols so that we can control lots of different models with one transmitter, because the primary thing that these transmitters have, all being proprietary, is they only talk to their own thing. So you know, they try to lock you into a specific type of, you know, model or receiver. And, you know, that's really where we get a huge bang from our software, is the ability to talk to almost anything out there.
So you've kind of created the universal remote for RC.
That's the goal. It's been quite challenging. It turns out that, you know, most helicopters these days are running on 2.4 gigahertz. And there's four or five different transceiver chips that are used across all these lines, and they don't talk to each other. So trying to figure out solutions that allow us to control all these different things has been quite challenging.
Well, so if they're using different chips, doesn't that mean it's entirely different radio frequencies, or it's just different ways of using the same radio frequency and it's more of a software issue?
Well, the chips are not compatible. So right now what we're doing is we're actually, one of the things that we support is basically modifying the internals of your transmitter. As I said, the everything works on an SPI bus. So you can basically buy these little modules from China for the different chips and wire them all in and then talk to them differently. And so you've got the hardware stack, the transceiver, and you have the software stack, the protocol that sits on top of it. And so with basically four different chips inside of this transmitter that have been hacked in, you know, aftermarket, you can control almost anything out there now.
It sounds like you might even eventually move to something like software-defined radio, or is that just not general enough for what you need?
Generally, we'd love to. So far, we haven't found anything that's fast enough to be able to keep up and that's cheap enough for it to be worthwhile. One of the side projects that I've been working on has basically been a custom board that actually has four different transceivers, the four different transceiver chips on it with a MUX in front of it and all in RF, so that you can just plug one board in, basically plug and play. We take out the one that comes with the radio, put this one in, and you're ready to go. We're not quite there yet, but we're very close.
Is there a linkage for this to, say, talk to, say, a laptop and be able to do complex program maneuvers?
So we do have support for USB, basically feeding USB signals into the transmitter and using USB to drive the transmitter. You know, that works already. As far as the standalone module I've been building, that will also have a USB mode, and theoretically you can just plug it into a computer and use it with no transmitter, just using software.
And I don't know if I got the answer to this earlier, but what license is this under, and why did you choose it?
As I said, everything's under GPL. I'm a big fan. Mostly I like having other people, you know, contribute to the projects and keep things open so I can see what they did. I find the GPL is a good license for that.
And how many other people actually are contributing to the code basis? Obviously more than just you.
It depends. Over the years, we've had a lot of different people come and go. RC is one of those things that people seem to get into and then out of. So we've had maybe four or five major contributors who have kind of done large portions of the code base over the years. And right now we probably have five or six people who work on smaller ways, either helping, most of them are helping with the protocol work. So, you know, all these toy helicopters and toys that are out there, people are figuring out how they work and writing the code to make them work in our transmitter.
Well, that's very, very cool. Well, we're about, Guillermo wants to ask a few questions, but before we do that, we have another important message for this particular show. We want to talk about DigitalOcean. Whether you're an experienced code warrior or just getting started, you need flexible, reliable, and affordable hosting. DigitalOcean provides developers with Droplets, which are virtual private servers that can be customized and deployed quickly to host websites, web apps, production applications, personal projects, virtual desktops, and almost anything else you can think of with full root access. I'm actually a DigitalOcean subscriber myself. I found out about it at this year's Scale. I started a little box up, and just like they say, in a moment here in the copy, I started my box in 55 seconds from the time I entered all the information. It was up and running. Nice little box, $5 a month, 20 gigs of SSD disk. Really cool. DigitalOcean is built for developers and used by over 400,000 of them, including me, as I just said. Deploy and configure your Droplets with a streamlined control panel or a simple API. Choose your OS, Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, CoreOS, and FreeBSD. I'm a FreeBSD user, so that made me really appeal to this. One-click install allows you to quickly deploy apps like Django, Docker, Drupal, LAMP, GitLab, MediaWiki, Node.js, WordPress, Ghost, Magento, Magento, OwnCloud, Ruby on Rails, and more. All servers are built on hex core machines with dedicated ECC RAM and RAID SSD storage. Very fast machine, very, very fast. Servers can have up to 20 CPUs, 64 gigs of RAM, and 640 gigs of SSD hard drive space. Highly scalable to meet the demands of a rapidly growing application or business. Auto backups and snapshots let you easily get done. Easily clone, deploy, and resize droplets as you grow. You can deploy servers in regions all over the world with gigabit speeds and 99.99% uptime. Full-featured DNS management to easily manage your domains or use dedicated IPs. Web console access with HTML5 plus SSH, SFTP, and KVM or VNC for virtual desktops. Extremely active community with a large and detailed set of tutorials on all the ways you can use your droplet. Want to deploy Docker? Set up a personal VPN? They've got you covered. And it's so easy to get started. You can deploy an SSD cloud server in as little as 55 seconds. I'm attesting to that. Definitely works. So DigitalOcean has incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing. Servers start at only $5 a month. There's also hourly pricing available starting at less than a penny per hour. But we're going to make it so you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code FLOSS for a free $10 credit. That's 2 months at $5 a month. That's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do. That's DigitalOcean.com. And once you sign up, enter the code FLOSS in the billing section for a $10 credit. We thank DigitalOcean for their support of this show. And now, Guillermo, you have some questions?
Yeah, you know, I was wondering if I wanted to start contributing to this project, would I need the hardware, you know, to start? Could I just maybe submit a few patches, work on this maybe in a simulator?
So we do have a simulator. It runs on, I think it'll run on almost any platform now. It certainly, it's a FLTK based. So we build it for Windows and Linux pretty regularly. It's actually part of my nightly build for at least Windows. It builds fine on Linux. I think people have built it on Mac. I'm not a big Mac guy, but anyway, so you can do a lot of the development on the simulator. I do almost all of the development on the simulator. The hardware itself, I mean, adding a new hardware device or, you know, the protocol work, that stuff all has to be done with actual hardware. But as far as, you know, the interface and, you know, getting new features in, yeah, that stuff, we do it all. At least I do it all with the simulator. So quite possible to do.
Yep. So it shouldn't be too expensive to get into the project. I'm guessing they can do away without the hardware for now and just maybe start working on the project, you know, on their off time.
Sure. If we're certainly welcome to have people who are interested. Generally speaking, I think that most of the people who are going to be interested in our project are going to want to be actually flying. So I would expect that they would rather quickly want to move into running hardware. But yeah, sure. You know, we'd be happy to have any help we can get.
Does somebody need a embedded experience to be able to contribute?
No. The code itself is all written in C. We have our own custom GUI, so, you know, getting up to speed can take a little bit of work to kind of understand the ropes. But the simulator itself is completely isolated. There's a very clear API layer that I've put in place to separate the hardware from the software. So if you're not actually trying to manipulate the hardware type of stuff, then you've got to, you know, just, you know, use your GCC and get going.
So how complicated would it be to get the tool chain working for this?
On Windows or Linux, it's real easy. I mean, Linux, there's no tool chain. You just get FLTK installed and you're ready to go. On Windows, basically, we have some instructions using MingW to basically build the FLTK and the sound drivers. And then again, you know, GCC and you're ready to go.
So just a short question. There's no Mac support, I'm guessing?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
There's no Macintosh support?
There is Macintosh support. Everything, I don't build it myself, but people do build on Macintosh just fine. I think you do need GCC, so I think you need to put your own compiler in there. But it's been built on Mac. We have instructions. I didn't write them because I don't have access to a Mac, but yeah, it works fine on Mac too. And for the actual hardware, you need to embedded stack to program the embedded devices for the actual transmitter. So for that, you need to go download the embedded GCC. from Launchpad.
So I'm sure our audience is probably interested in knowing what does it make it what would make it what would make it better? Yeah, sorry. What would make it better for you to choose this open firmware? Compared to the proprietary firmware that came with the device. I know you guys mentioned that it makes it maybe easier to customize, but is there any other features that we can talk about?
So there's several things that you can do. Certainly. We can get a lot more from the low-end devices. So you can buy the cheapest device they have, which is, I think, a Devo 7e. And you can get full 12 channels out of it. It only starts with 7. You can add, again, if you want to, you can take this really cheap device and you can add extra switches to it and get a lot more functionality. And then again, as I mentioned, the ability to basically control any 2.4 gigahertz model out there with one transmitter means that for people who have a bunch of radios or a bunch of vehicles, they go out there with all their vehicles and just one transmitter, and they can control them all. So those are the big things, I think, from my perspective. Certainly, we give you a lot more flexibility to do complex things, but most people don't want to do complex things. I mean, the majority of people want to do a lot of simple things.
And in security-wise, and how could... I'm not sure if you flash this on your controller, would you guys be legally responsible if something wrong were to happen? Let's say if the controller shuts down and the airplane you're flying maybe crashes against to a house or a car.
I hope not. So we obviously tell everybody, and there's a huge warning on our page that in the end, it's your responsibility to control this. The firmware will crash every once in a while. We work really hard to make that not the case, but it is absolutely in development. If you're flying a big, expensive, powerful helicopter, you need to make sure that you're flying it safely, which means keeping it away from people. If you're flying smaller things, then they're not going to hurt as much. But we've had a lot of people crash. We've broken a lot of things, and nobody's ever tried to complain that, it was our fault. I mean, obviously, the software is there and it might not work, but you really have to take responsibility for your own actions when you're using this. And so this is really one of those cases where, we're just providing you a service. If you decide to use that, then, you should take responsibility for it.
So I'm sort of curious, you keep talking about customizing this. What's the interface for that? Do I have to change the C code to say set that that double trim that Mike was talking about, or is there some sort of scripting language built into this so I can just edit a text file to make it have different combinations? Things like that. Where's my customization coming from?
So the different radios all have different interfaces to some extent. They all of Walkera's radios have basically 6 buttons that control it on the radio for kind of working through. They all have the video screens on them of some sort. So it's a black and white low resolution or a color touch high resolution screen. They all have some sort of interface that's giving you feedback. So we have a series of menus that you can work through to basically configure anything you need to inside the transmitter while you're sitting there. Our software also writes out an INI file onto a flash disk, onto the flash memory, and you can access that as a USB drive. So if you take your transmitter, you can plug it into your PC and turn it on, and it will recognize as a SD drive or a flash drive, and you can copy files on and off, and you can work on all these files and text, which people do. It's a good way to share files. We have a huge library on our website of all the different models that people have customized and set up properly. So you can go on there, find one that fits your needs, copy it to your transmitter, and you're ready to go with no kind of having to twiddle with it.
So is this a text file, or is it a programming language, or something in between?
It's just a text file. It's INI. I mean, it's pretty bog standard key value pairs as far as what the text file itself is.
Okay, and so somewhere in there, I'd be able to say that this particular slider controls both of these outputs by a factor of 2-to-1 on one and 1-to-1 on the other. Is there a language for that?
So we do obviously have our own keys as far as what they are and what they mean, and We don't have very good documentation on that side. As I said, the most common way to do it is either with the simulator or with on the actual hardware to create this file through the menu system and then just write it out and you can look at it. Really, just really advanced people or debuggers will go through and actually look inside the INI to understand what it has in it. But basically, yeah, there's a kind of a mini language that defines, you know, all the keys and how what the right legal values for them are.
And so where is there anything that the standard software for these does that you haven't quite caught up with yet? Or is this completely eliminated any need I'd ever want to go back to the original software?
There are a few things that we don't do. One of them is that the original firmware allows you to wirelessly transmit models between radios. So you can send somebody your model and if they have the same transmitter, they could use that. Now we've gone a different direction. We've decided that we want all of the transmitters we support to be interchangeable, so that you can take the model file from one transmitter and put it on a totally different model transmitter, and it will work. Yeah. Volterra does do that. They only allow you to transmit between equivalent transmitters, the same model. But it's something that we don't have support for, as an example.
Okay, and where is this heading? What's the biggest thing that you're still missing as of today?
Well, as I said, there's a couple of transmitters that we really want to be able to support that we don't yet. And I think the next big thing will be this trying to the hardware side, try to get this universal module that you can plug in so that you don't have to do a bunch of soldering to get all your to get the full support for all of the protocols.
Okay, and I was actually pawing through the manual, not that I understand half of it, but I noticed there were some GPS displays. Does that mean these big new machines have their own onboard GPS?
Lots of models now have GPS. As I said, drones are getting pretty big these days, and drones tend to have GPS coordinates built, GPS receivers built into them. And that information all can get transmitted back to the transmitter. Also, you can put on add-on GPS onto many different models, depending on what you want. So I haven't used the GPS myself much, as I said. I don't know if I mentioned it or not, but I don't actually fly all that often. So in fact, I'm just a terrible pilot. I'm much more interested in the hardware and the software side than I am in actually playing with these things, as it turns out. But as far as support goes, yeah, we have all that.
And does that mean you could have like a panic button that says, bring it back to me?
In theory, we haven't gotten that. I mean, I don't have scripts that are quite sophisticated enough to do that kind of flying. That's more of automation. And the transmitter software that we're writing is really built for drone flying for that kind of automation.
Okay, great. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, if your drone supports that kind of panic button, deviation will work with it. I have one that does that, and it works just fine. Throw the panic button, and I will and put the transmitter down and watch it land wherever it took off from.
Awesome, awesome. That sounds really cool. Go ahead, sorry.
Just a little thought. Are you guys thinking of maybe making this some sort of Internet of Things device? When will I be able to control the controller with my cell phone?
It's interesting that you asked that. It's another project that I've been working on, sort of on the side of being able to interface with a Bluetooth module, the transmitter, and the with your phone, so that you can run effectively. You can run a better interface on your phone to the transmitter. Now, in theory, that could be extended all the way to full control, so you could just fly it around with your phone. That's not the direction I'm personally going in right now, but it's certainly possible.
We're just about out of time, so I want to get each of you have a chance to give tell us about anything that we didn't actually cover in the show. So we'll start with you, Mike. Is there anything that we didn't ask that you really wanted to make sure our audience was aware of?
No, I think you got to all of it.
Very good. And same question for you, Jeffrey.
I'd like to talk about.
Sorry, yeah, Jeffrey. Same question.
No, I think we covered pretty much the gambit of what we're up to here.
Cool. And I have to ask a couple of common questions or else my audience will yell at me. Really, they do. Jeffrey, first, I think I know the answer to one of these questions, but what's your favorite scripting language?
I certainly do most of my programming in Perl, so that's probably where I'd go.
Yay. One of the first guys that answered. Most of it's Python these days. Ugh, the other P language. Anyway, and what's your favorite what's your favorite text editor?
I'm a VI man.
Oh, well, one out of two isn't bad. One out of two isn't bad. All right. Didn't say the magical Emacs word. And Mike, same questions for you.
My favorite scripting language would be Haskell these days. And my preferred text editor is Emacs running on FreeBSD.
Yay, Emacs and FreeBSD. That's two correct answers. That counts up for all the other ones. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Well,
I would
guys,
probably say that's half.
No, that's not half. That's two. Come on. That's 2 points. I got 2 points on that last answer. I run the scoreboard. It's my scoreboard. It's my show. Well, guys, thanks for coming on today and talking about Deviation TX. I don't do this stuff, but I thank you also, Guillermo, for asking really, really good questions. I got really fascinated as we were going through this. So thanks, guys, for coming on. Hopefully it'll bring more people to your project and more people get awareness of that. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Take care. There we go. Stomping all over my guests again. I should stop doing that. That was Mike Meyer and Jeffrey Hauscher. Oh, good. Now I've forgotten already. It's the end of the show. Talking to us about Deviation TX. What do you think, Guillermo?
The project sounds super interesting. You know, I am actually tempted to download the source code and check it out.
Yeah. It's one of these things. I mean, like when we did the Open Pilot show and I went, oh, it'd be so cool to play with this stuff. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm always on the road. Where would it be? It would be in Portland where I'm never at. Then I would just sit in a corner consuming more space than I need to be taken up. But, you know, if you've got smarter controllers, I mean, part of the problem was why I was playing back in the dumb days when you know, like fly a helicopter, you really had to be someone who could really fly a helicopter because so many things are correlated. And you have to correlate them all correctly. But this sounds good. This sounds really, really good. And I'm glad these guys are putting this kind of work in being able to customize stuff. Great. So without further ado, let's go ahead and look at who's coming up. Going to the big spreadsheet there. Coming up next week, we have CoPay. That's a follow-up to the BitCore show that we did a while back. And it's about a secure shared wallet where two people have to sign off, or three people, or any two of four people have to sign off for them to get to make payments from a particular set of monies there. Lucy is an open implementation of CFML. People are still using that these days, apparently, just like people are still using Perl. It's not a dead language. It's really not a dead language. Weave, which is about Docker container-based deployments, talking about setting up a whole set of Docker things, all talking to each other with a virtual private network between them, so it's all transparent, no matter what cloud you're in particularly. Veracrypt, which is the heir apparent of TrueCrypt. So TrueCrypt development has stopped, but Veracrypt picked up where they left off, fixed a bunch of the things that were broken, and we've got one of the project leaders coming in to talk about that. Satnogs. I guess it's not eggnogs, it's Satnogs. It's satellite ground stations with commodity hardware. If you want to start Skynet, this would be the ground station of choice. Augur is a decentralized open source prediction market application platform, which sounds to me like it will be a good show for buzzword bingo. We'll have to figure out how that actually goes on. We will be at OSCON. There's some surprise guest scheduled there. I cannot tell you who it is. The real hint is I don't know who it is either. We just have to get there. So surprise guest for OSCON. And then rounding up the list for who's already scheduled is Dart, the Dart programming language, Google's new language for being really smart in the browser. That's Lars Back and Casper Lund, the actual Dart lead guys, are coming in to talk about that. That should be a really exciting show. On the short list, we have Koha ILS, Information Management System for libraries, Tuleap, which is Application Lifecycle Management, and AngularJS, also on the short list. I should be talking to them real soon now. If you want to see all those names again, because I rattled them off too fast, you go to the big spreadsheet linked from twit.tv/floss. If you have a particular project that's not on that list, be sure to have the project leader email me. Don't tell me about a project. I know about lots of projects, but it works much easier. Almost all the shows in the last 300 shows have been crowdsourced by y'all out there. So if you want a show on a project on this show, have the project leader email me. The email address is right there, merlin@stoneimage.com. You can follow us on Floss Weekly on Google+. I announce new guests there and occasionally point out things of other good stuff. That's also linked to Floss Weekly, Twitter handle. What is that? There we go. We have a live chat. We took a couple of questions from the live chat this time. It's on live.twit.tv. Right now, it's at 8:30 a.m. Pacific times. But big important announcement. Da-da-da. The earliest show on the Twit Network is becoming even earlier. We're moving to 8 o'clock slot starting June 10th. So we'll be moved back by then. Is it June 10th? June 9th? June 9th. One of those. June 9th. I have 10th written down for a reason. It's really the 9th. Okay. Sorry about that. Thanks for the chat room. You can follow me, Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter. Google Plus is Randall L. Schwartz. I have a very important announcement I want to make right now. You all heard about Nepal and the earthquake and the problems there and, the relief efforts trying to go on. My friend Chris Marquardt is an excellent photographer. He's been to Nepal many times, taking people up to the base camp at Mount Everest. And he, in response to the Nepal situation, has created this wonderful 80-page picture book. It's just a download, so it's all yours. You can contribute anywhere between $10 and $100, and that goes directly to Chris's friends in Nepal or to organizations that he can trust based on what he hears from his friends there in Nepal. So you really, really, really should consider giving that away. 100% of the proceeds, he's not making a dime off this. It's all going directly to Nepal relief. So check that out. That's at tfttf.com/fundraiser. tfttf.com/fundraiser. Chris, thank you for doing that. I'm going to be also at YAPSE North America in early June. That means I'll be in the Salt Lake City area. If you're in the Salt Lake City area, watch up for my tweets and stuff like that. Maybe we'll do a meetup while we get there. I'm also going to be down in Porto Alegre, Brazil, in July. That's for the Fizzle show. 5,000 people attending an open source conference. Huge stuff. And I'm going to be presenting it for an hour about Dart, the Dart programming language. So I'm learning Dart very rapidly so I can teach it. That's the best way to learn something. I think that's enough talking for me. Guillermo, what do you have to plug today?
I guess not really much. If you, I guess you can follow me on Twitter, which is at Gamerel, and look for me on YouTube, which I'm posting a few videos there.
Or also just wandering around the streets of Tijuana occasionally.
It depends on the time of day and if it's the weekend or not.
All right, Guillermo. Hey, your questions were so on spot. I'm glad on spot? Spot on?
Spot on.
Now my English is getting bad.
it's super hot here today. So I'm not, I'm just a little bit off my game. But yeah, I really find most of this stuff super interesting. I get to work on embedded a lot. So it's basically what I work on. So it's super great.
Yep. Well, you've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Floss Weekly. No, just kidding. So thank you all again for listening to the show. And we'll see you again next week on Floss Weekly.